Escuelas oficiales de idiomas de Andalucía. Comprensión oral. Inglés. Nivel C1. Tarea 1. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Extract zero.
Well, I do want to change it. And I think it's because, in my view, I'll run through a bit of a list of reasons, I suppose, in a second, but at the most, you know, sort of high level, it's, you know, I think the flag should represent modern day New Zealand. And I always think that the flag is a sort of symbol of who we are and what we are. And I don't think the current flag does. And I think in a world where we're trying to build.
Extract one.
You know, through that in a moment, but look, I suppose in the end, if the only reason that you won't change is because of the fact that it's historical connection, for some people that will be a good enough reason, but in my mind, it's not the best reason. And
extract two.
So if the reason is it's our flag and we shouldn't change our flag, that's not a terribly good reason because it's our third flag. So on the basis that we shouldn't change a flag, then we should go all the way back to number one. So countries do change flags. They happen a lot more regularly than you might think. So number two is...
Extract three.
It's, you know, it's not funny. It happens all the time. Our games athletes will tell you that. And in fact, if you don't believe me, I think it was The Guardian or The Telegraph wrote an article when I first went on this thing last year, congratulating me for my leadership and all the rest of it, and literally not trying to be funny, the picture was of me with an Australian flag behind me. So, you know, people can't work it out. The third and I think biggest reason...
Extract four.
If you go out there to the Western Front, to the Commonwealth graves that are right around Europe, go and have a look at those gravestones, because those gravestones have on them the silver fern. They don't have the New Zealand flag. They have the silver fern. That's what's on our gravestones around the world.
Extract five.
So the fourth thing is, you know, international recognition. Like a flag has a degree of, you know, it means something to everybody else. It's not so much what it means to us, it's what it means to everybody else. And if you go and look at the big issue, I reckon, is around, you know, you put the silver fern, which, you know, ultimately I think would be part of our flag, you put that on something, then all of a sudden it means something to an international audience that this is New Zealand.
Extract six.
Because you pick up, let's say you pick up an item of clothing. Let's just argue this. So something that's not that recognisable, and on the label, It has a maple leaf. Are you under any illusion about where that came from?
I've never seen one.
Well, I have.
I don't,
when you buy your maple syrup that no doubt you pour, smother over your hot cakes and pancakes on Sunday morning, don't you just look for the tick of quality that's from Canna?
No, because I don't have pancakes.
Well, you need to get out more. I'm sorry.
Extract 7.
But what happened was the Canadians went away from a flag very similar to the one that we've got. I think it was red, but pretty similar. And, you know, I think it's like finding people who voted for MMP. You can't find them out there. Find me a person that in Canada that would seriously say we should go back to their old flag. Are you really telling me that if we had the silver fern on something, the day after we voted for that change, that New Zealanders would then say, I want to go back to the old flag? It will not happen. People will look back in about 12 months and they'll go, that's the best decision we made.
Extract 8.
Step, right?
No, your first step will be literally this eminent persons group will distill all the designs that they get. I don't know how they'll go through a process that, but in the end they'll get three or four, and you would get a ballot paper that would say, irrelevant of whether you want to change or not, just of the four that are in front of you, which won't include the current New Zealand flag, pick the one you like the most. And if more people pick A, then the second vote is a runoff between A and the current New Zealand flag.
Extract 9.
Popular again, and those numbers for looking to become a republic have come back. I mean, it has to be seen against the context of I am the biggest constitutional monarchist you'll find. I don't think we should be replacing the head of state with someone elected from New Zealand. I think the Queen, and therefore her representative, in this case, Sir Gerry Matapara, do an outstanding job.
Extract 10.
Implications of them could be quite significant, and people would sit there and say, is this the most important issue really, you know, kind of, you know, this guy thinks this is, you know, bigger than the economy or the environment or poor children or whatever. And of course I don't. I mean, in the end, that's why I took it off the, you know, the process around the election, to say, you know, the election should be about the economy, law and order, health, education and the likes.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Ahora, escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Extract 0.
Well, I do want to change it. And I think it's because, in my view, I'll run through a bit of a list of reasons, I suppose, in a second, but at the most, you know, sort of high level, it's, you know, I think the flag should represent modern-day New Zealand. And I always think that the flag is a sort of symbol of who we are and what we are, and I don't think the current flag does. And I think in a world where we're trying to build...
Extract 1.
And I'll come through, you know, through that in a moment. But look, I suppose in the end, if the only reason that you won't change is because of the fact that it's a historical connection, for some people that will be a good enough reason. But in my mind, it's not the best reason. And
Extract 2.
So if the reason is it's our flag and we shouldn't change our flag, that's not a terribly good reason, because it's our third flag. So on the basis that we shouldn't change a flag, then we should go all the way back to number one. So people, countries do change flags. They happen a lot more regularly than you might think. So number two is...
Extract 3.
It's, you know, it's not funny. It happens all the time. Our games athletes will tell you that. And in fact, if you don't believe me, I think it was The Guardian or The Telegraph wrote an article when I first went on this thing last year, congratulating me for my leadership and all the rest of it, and literally not trying to be funny, the picture was of me with an Australian flag behind me. So, you know, people can't work it out. The third and I think biggest reason...
Extract 4.
If you go out there to the Western Front, to the Commonwealth graves that are right around Europe, go and have a look at those gravestones, because those gravestones have on them the silver fern. They don't have the New Zealand flag. They have the silver fern. That's what's on our gravestones around the world.
Extract 5.
So the fourth thing is, you know, international recognition. Like a flag has a degree of, you know, it means something to everybody else. It's not so much what it means to us, it's what it means to everybody else. And if you go and look at the big issue, I reckon, is around, you know, you put the silver fern, which, you know, ultimately I think would be part of our flag, you put that on something, then all of a sudden it means something to an international audience that this is New Zealand.
Extract 6.
Because you pick up, let's say you pick up an item of clothing. Let's just argue this. So something that's not that recognisable, and on the label it has a maple leaf. Are you under any illusion about where that came from?
I've never seen one.
Well, I have.
I don't...
When you buy your maple syrup that no doubt you pour, smother over your hot cakes and pancakes on Sunday morning, don't you just look for the tick of quality that's from Canada?
No, because I don't have pancakes.
Well, you need to get out more. I'm sorry.
Extract 7.
But what happened was the Canadians went away from a flag very similar to the one that we've got. I think it was red, but pretty similar. And, you know, I think it's like finding people who voted for MMP. You can't find them out there. Find me a person that in Canada that would seriously say we should go back to their old flag. Are you really telling me that if we had the silver fern on something, the day after we voted for that change, that New Zealanders would then say, I want to go back to the old flag? It will not happen. People will look back in about 12 months and they'll go, that's the best decision we made.
Extract 8.
First step, right?
No, your first step will be literally, this eminent persons group will distill all the designs that they get. I don't know how they'll go through a process that, but in the end they'll get 3 or 4, and you would get a ballot paper that would say, irrelevant of whether you want to change or not, just of the 4 that are in front of you, which won't include the current New Zealand flag, pick the one you like the most. And if more people pick A, then the second vote is a runoff between A and the current New Zealand flag.
Extract 9.
More popular again, and those numbers for looking to become a republic have come back. I mean, it has to be seen against the context of I am the biggest constitutional monarchist you'll find. I don't think we should be replacing the head of state with someone elected from New Zealand. I think the Queen, and therefore her representative, in this case, Sir Gerry Mataparai, do an outstanding job.
Extract 10.
Long-term implications of them could be quite significant. And people would sit there and say, is this the most important issue really? You know, kind of, you know, this guy thinks this is, you know, bigger than the economy or the environment or poor children or whatever. And of course I don't. I mean, in the end, that's why I took it off the, you know, the process around the election to say, you know, the election should be about the economy, law and order, health, education and the likes.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Ahora, escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Extract 0.
Well, I do want to change it. And I think it's because, in my view, I'll run through a bit of a list of reasons, I suppose, in a second, but at the most, you know, sort of high level, it's, you know, I think the flag should represent modern-day New Zealand. And I always think the flag is a sort of symbol of who we are and what we are. And I don't think the current flag does. And I think in a world where we're trying to build...
Extract one.
Through that in a moment, but look, I suppose in the end, if the only reason that you won't change is because of the fact that it's a historical connection, for some people that will be a good enough reason, but in my mind it's not the best reason. And
extract two.
So if the reason is it's our flag and we shouldn't change our flag, that's not a terribly good reason, because it's our third flag. So on the basis that we shouldn't change a flag, then we should go all the way back to number one. So people, countries do change flags. They happen a lot more regularly than you might think. So number two is...
Extract three.
It's not funny. It happens all the time. Our games athletes will tell you that. And in fact, if you don't believe me, I think it was The Guardian or The Telegraph wrote an article when I first went on this thing last year, congratulating me for my leadership and all the rest of it, and literally not trying to be funny, the picture was of me with an Australian flag behind me. So, people can't work it out. The third and, I think, biggest reason...
Extract four.
If you go out there to the Western Front, to the Commonwealth graves that are right around Europe, go and have a look at those gravestones, because those gravestones have on them the silver fern. They don't have the New Zealand flag. They have the silver fern. That's what's on our gravestones around the world.
Extract five.
So the fourth thing is, international recognition. Like, a flag has a degree of, it means something to everybody else. It's not so much what it means to us, it's what it means to everybody else. And if you go and look at the big issue, I reckon, is around, you put the silver fern, which ultimately I think would be part of our flag, you put that on something, then all of a sudden it means something to an international audience that this is New Zealand.
Extract six.
Because let's say you pick up an item of clothing. Let's just argue this. So something that's not that recognisable, and on the label it has a maple leaf. Are you under any illusion about where that came from?
I've never seen one.
Well, I have.
When
you buy your maple syrup that no doubt you pour, smother over your hot cakes and pancakes on Sunday morning, don't you just look for the tick of quality that's from Canada?
No, because I don't have pancakes.
Well, you need to get out more. I'm sorry.
Extract seven.
But what happened was the Canadians went away from a flag very similar to the one that we've got. I think it was red, but pretty similar. And, I think it's like finding people who voted for MMP. You can't find them out there. Find me a person that in Canada that would seriously say we should go back to their old flag. Are you really telling me that if we had the silver fern on something, the day after we voted for that change, that New Zealanders would then say, I want to go back to the old flag? It will not happen. People will look back in about 12 months and they'll go, that's the best decision we made.
Extract eight.
Step right.
No, your first step will be literally this eminent persons group will distill all the designs that they get. I don't know how they'll go through a process that, but in the end they'll get three or four, and you would get a ballot paper that would say, irrelevant of whether you want to change or not, just of the four that are in front of you, which won't include the current New Zealand flag, pick the one you like the most. And if more people pick A, then the second vote is a runoff between A and the current New Zealand flag.
Extract nine.
Popular again, and those numbers for looking to become a republic have come back. I mean, it has to be seen against the context of I am the biggest constitutional monarchist you'll find. I don't think we should be replacing the head of state with someone elected from New Zealand. I think the Queen, and therefore her representative, in this case, Sir Jerry Mataparai, do an outstanding job.
Extract 10.
Implications of them could be quite significant, and people would sit there and say, is this the most important issue really? This guy thinks this is bigger than the economy or the environment or poor children or whatever. And of course I don't. I mean, in the end, that's why I took it off the process around the election, to say the election should be about the economy, law and order, health, education and the likes.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 1. Tarea 2. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
I'm sure we've all had trouble sleeping at one point or another, maybe trouble falling asleep, staying asleep, or waking up. Or maybe you're forcing yourself to sleep less because you have too much to do to lie in bed. But sleep deprivation can be a serious issue. People who don't get enough sleep are more irritable and perform worse on memory and attention tasks than people who do. So while this can be just a minor annoyance in everyday life, imagine the long-term implications for, say, airline pilots, firefighters, security officers, or the person driving next to you on the freeway. For example, one study in Canada showed that the Monday after the spring time change, so when people lose an hour of sleep, the number of traffic accidents increases sharply. Compared to the Monday after the fall time change, when people get an extra hour of sleep, the number of accidents decreases sharply. So that's just one example, but sleep deprivation also makes people more susceptible to obesity. When you're sleep deprived, your body produces more cortisol, which is a hormone that tells your body to make more fat. And you also produce more of the hormone that tells your body you're hungry. So you end up eating more and turning more of what you eat into fat, which can contribute to weight gain. And finally, sleep deprivation can also increase your risk for depression. And one theory about this link is that REM sleep helps your brain process emotional experiences, which in turn helps protect against depression, though we're still not entirely sure about this link. Most people experience sleep deprivation at some points in their lives. But the good news is that most people can get back on track by getting a few nights of good sleep, sort of paying back your sleep debt. Your next question might be then, how much sleep is enough sleep? That's kind of a hard question to answer, but most adults need about 7 to 8 hours of sleep, but the exact number varies by individual and by age. Babies need a lot more sleep, for example, and older adults can often sleep less than 7 or 8 hours without severe detriments. Again, everyone has trouble falling asleep at some point, but people who have persistent problems in falling or staying asleep have a more serious sleep disorder called insomnia. There are various medications that can help people fall asleep, but taking them for too long can result in dependence and tolerance, which is if a person continues to rely on the medication, then their body will get used to it and they'll eventually need more and more to get the same effects. Now that can often be a bad thing because there are side effects to drugs, but so treatment for insomnia often involves psychological training as well as or sometimes instead of medication. And some lifestyle changes might also be necessary. For example, exercise regularly but not right before bed, or spend some time just relaxing before bed, and these can help people with insomnia. On the other end of the spectrum is narcolepsy, which is a disorder when people can't help themselves from falling asleep. So about 1 in 2,000 people suffers from narcolepsy, and most of the time, people with narcolepsy will have these spontaneous fits of intense sleepiness, occasionally lapsing into REM sleep. And these fits last about 5 minutes and can occur really any time. Although the cause of narcolepsy is still under investigation, there are indications that it's genetic, and it's linked to the absence of a certain neurotransmitter that helps with alertness, suggesting that neurochemical interventions may help some people overcome this problem. A more common sleep disorder is sleep apnea, which affects about 1 in 20 people. This one's a little scary because people who have apnea are really unlikely to be aware of it. What happens is that people stop breathing while they sleep. After about a minute of not breathing, your body realizes you're not getting enough oxygen, and you wake up just long enough to gasp for air, and then fall back asleep without really being aware of what happened. And this can actually happen as many as hundreds of times each night, which is a lot, and because you're constantly drifting kind of between sleep and wakefulness, you don't really get enough of your deeper stages of sleep. So it prevents you from going into the N3 stage or the slow wave sleep. Snoring can be an indication of sleep apnea. So if you've ever been told that you snore and you often feel fatigued in the morning, even after what you think is a full night's sleep, then you might be one of the 1 in 20 people with sleep apnea. But it's very treatable, so don't worry. Sleepwalking and sleep talking are the last sleep disorders we're going to talk about. Like narcolepsy, these are mostly genetic. They occur during N3 stage sleep and are usually harmless as long as you don't walk into a dangerous situation or reveal any deep dark secrets. Sleepwalking and talking occur more frequently in children, partially because children experience more N3 stage sleep than adults. But as you grow, these nighttime adventures become much less frequent.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Ahora, escuche de nuevo la grabación.
I'm sure we've all had trouble sleeping at one point or another. Maybe trouble falling asleep, staying asleep, or waking up. Or maybe you're forcing yourself to sleep less because you have too much to do to lie in bed. But sleep deprivation can be a serious issue. People who don't get enough sleep are more irritable and perform worse on memory and attention tasks than people who do. So while this can be just a minor annoyance in everyday life, imagine the long-term implications for, say, airline pilots, firefighters, security officers, or the person driving next to you on the freeway. For example, one study in Canada showed that the Monday after the spring time change, so when people lose an hour of sleep, the number of traffic accidents increases sharply compared to the Monday after the fall time change when people get an extra hour of sleep. The number of accidents decreases sharply. So that's just one example, but sleep deprivation also makes people more susceptible to obesity. When you're sleep deprived, your body produces more cortisol, which is a hormone that tells your body to make more fat. And you also produce more of the hormone that tells your body you're hungry. So you end up eating more and turning more of what you eat into fat, which can contribute to weight gain. And finally, sleep deprivation can also increase your risk for depression. And one theory about this link is that REM sleep helps your brain process emotional experiences, which in turn helps protect against depression, though we're still not entirely sure about this link. Most people experience sleep deprivation at some points in their lives. But the good news is that most people can get back on track by getting a few nights of good sleep, sort of paying back your sleep debt. Your next question might be then, how much sleep is enough sleep? That's kind of a hard question to answer, but most adults need about 7 to 8 hours of sleep, but the exact number varies by individual. and by age. Babies need a lot more sleep, for example, and older adults can often sleep less than 7 or 8 hours without severe detriments. Again, everyone has trouble falling asleep at some point, but people who have persistent problems in falling or staying asleep have a more serious sleep disorder called insomnia. There are various medications that can help people fall asleep, but taking them for too long can result in dependence and tolerance, which is if a person continues to rely on the medication, then their body will get used to it and they'll eventually need more and more to get the same effects. Now that can often be a bad thing because there are side effects to drugs, but so treatment for insomnia often involves psychological training as well as or sometimes instead of medication. And some lifestyle changes might also be necessary. For example, exercise regularly but not right before bed, or spend some time just relaxing before bed. And these can help people with insomnia. On the other end of the spectrum is narcolepsy, which is a disorder when people can't help themselves from falling asleep. So about 1 in 2,000 people suffers from narcolepsy, and most of the time, people with narcolepsy will have these spontaneous fits of intense sleepiness, occasionally lapsing into REM sleep. And these fits last about 5 minutes and can occur really any time. Although the cause of narcolepsy is still under investigation, there are indications that it's genetic, and it's linked to the absence of a certain neurotransmitter that helps with alertness, suggesting that neurochemical interventions may help some people overcome this problem. A more common sleep disorder is sleep apnea, which affects about 1 in 20 people. This one's a little scary because people who have apnea are really unlikely to be aware of it. What happens is that people stop breathing while they sleep. After about a minute of not breathing, your body realizes you're not getting enough oxygen, and you wake up just long enough to gasp for air, and then fall back asleep without really being aware of what happened. And this can actually happen as many as hundreds of times each night, which is a lot, and because you're constantly drifting kind of between sleep and wakefulness, you don't really get enough of your deeper stages of sleep. So it prevents you from going into the N3 stage or the slow wave sleep. Snoring can be an indication of sleep apnea. So if you've ever been told that you snore and you often feel fatigued in the morning, even after what you think is a full night's sleep, then you might be one of the 1 in 20 people with sleep apnea. But it's very treatable, so don't worry. Sleepwalking and sleep talking are the last sleep disorders we're going to talk about. Like narcolepsy, these are mostly genetic. They occur during N3 stage sleep and are usually harmless as long as you don't walk into a dangerous situation or reveal any deep dark secrets. Sleepwalking and talking occur more frequently in children, partially because children experience more N3 stage sleep than adults. But as you grow, these nighttime adventures become much less frequent.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Ahora, escuche de nuevo la grabación.
I'm sure we've all had trouble sleeping at one point or another. Maybe trouble falling asleep, staying asleep, or waking up. Or maybe you're forcing yourself to sleep less because you have too much to do to lie in bed. But sleep deprivation can be a serious issue. People who don't get enough sleep are more irritable and perform worse on memory and attention tasks than people who do. So while this can be just a minor annoyance in everyday life, imagine the long-term implications for, say, airline pilots, firefighters, security officers, or the person driving next to you on the freeway. For example, one study in Canada showed that the Monday after the spring time change, so when people lose an hour of sleep, the number of traffic accidents increases sharply compared to the Monday after the fall time change when people get an extra hour of sleep. The number of accidents decreases sharply. So that's just one example, but sleep deprivation also makes people more susceptible to obesity. When you're sleep deprived, your body produces more cortisol, which is a hormone that tells your body to make more fat. And you also produce more of the hormone that tells your body you're hungry. So you end up eating more and turning more of what you eat into fat, which can contribute to weight gain. And finally, sleep deprivation can also increase your risk for depression. And one theory about this link is that REM sleep helps your brain process emotional experiences, which in turn helps protect against depression, though we're still not entirely sure about this link. Most people experience sleep deprivation at some points in their lives. But the good news is that most people can get back on track by getting a few nights of good sleep, sort of paying back your sleep debt. Your next question might be then, how much sleep is enough sleep? That's kind of a hard question to answer, but most adults need about 7 to 8 hours of sleep, but the exact number varies by individual and by age. Babies need a lot more sleep, for example, and older adults can often sleep less than 7 or 8 hours without severe detriments. Again, everyone has trouble falling asleep at some point, but people who have persistent problems in falling or staying asleep have a more serious sleep disorder called insomnia. There are various medications that can help people fall asleep, but taking them for too long can result in dependence and tolerance, which is if a person continues to rely on the medication, then their body will get used to it and they'll eventually need more and more to get the same effects. Now that can often be a bad thing because there are side effects to drugs, but so treatment for insomnia often involves psychological training as well as, or sometimes instead of medication. And some lifestyle changes might also be necessary. For example, exercise regularly but not right before bed, or spend some time just relaxing before bed. And these can help people with insomnia. On the other end of the spectrum is narcolepsy, which is a disorder when people can't help themselves from falling asleep. So about 1 in 2,000 people suffers from narcolepsy, and most of the time, people with narcolepsy will have these spontaneous fits of intense sleepiness, occasionally lapsing into REM sleep. And these fits last about 5 minutes and can occur really any time. Although the cause of narcolepsy is still under investigation, there are indications that it's genetic, and it's linked to the absence of a certain neurotransmitter that helps with alertness, suggesting that neurochemical interventions may help some people overcome this problem. A more common sleep disorder is sleep apnea, which affects about 1 in 20 people. This one's a little scary because people who have apnea are really unlikely to be aware of it. What happens is that people stop breathing while they sleep. After about a minute of not breathing, your body realizes you're not getting enough oxygen, and you wake up just long enough to gasp for air and then fall back asleep without really being aware of what happened. And this can actually happen as many as hundreds of times each night, which is a lot, and because you're constantly drifting kind of between sleep and wakefulness, you don't really get enough of your deeper stages of sleep. So it prevents you from going into the N3 stage or the slow wave sleep. Snoring can be an indication of sleep apnea. So if you've ever been told that you snore and you often feel fatigued in the morning, even after what you think is a full night's sleep, then you might be one of the 1 in 20 people with sleep apnea. But it's very treatable, so don't worry. Sleepwalking and sleep talking are the last sleep disorders we're going to talk about. Like narcolepsy, these are mostly genetic. They occur during N3 stage sleep and are usually harmless as long as you don't walk into a dangerous situation or reveal any deep dark secrets. Sleepwalking and talking occur more frequently in children, partially because children experience more N3 stage sleep than adults. But as you grow, these nighttime adventures become much less frequent.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 2. Aquí acaba la prueba de comprensión oral. Por favor, siga las instrucciones del profesorado en su aula.